Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I am so excited about this week's show. It's time for our annual The Year So Far show, so I am joined by JB.
He's more excited about this show than he's excited about this year.
About the year so far. You can find our website at fthismovie.net. You should follow us on Twitter. We are at F This Movie. You should like us on Facebook, and you can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. J-Bones, because we're going to be talking about everything that came out this year, I thought we would just forego the What Have You Seen Lately section.
I think that's very wise.
Fantastic. Let's move right into our topic. We're trying to keep this show under 2 hours.
It's such a load off my mind. I have to remember last week.
I discovered something. We were just talking about this before we pressed record, that as I was looking at the movies that have come out so far this year, and we usually do this show right around this time, right when the summer kind of begins, kind of checking in, how are things going? And
are you ready for the summer?
I have seen...
Are you ready for the good times?
I have seen fewer
ready for kids at school?
Movies this year. It seems like I took January off, and I wonder if that was because I had that crazy back thing, but I didn't see most of what came out in January.
You didn't miss a lot. Missed the tail ends of Christmas, as usual, because
right.
We live in Chicago. In the rest of the free world, was Her a 2013 release?
Yes.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think we've discussed it before on the podcast, so I don't chew my cabbage twice. You missed Labor Day, which was just...
Is that an expression?
It is.
Is it right?
It is.
Why cabbage?
Lately, I've
Why
been...
Why not candy bar?
Lately, I've been using a lot of old man expressions. Perhaps it's because I'm an old man. You didn't miss much, and I know this year started out poorly.
Yeah.
Because the first movie I went to see was Grudge Match.
Yeesh. I missed Ride Along. I missed the first Hercules movie, but not the second.
That's coming.
I missed I, Frankenstein. I missed one that you liked, Liam Neeson, Nonstop.
I thought Nonstop was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I never saw Nonstop.
I have a feeling that you will have more than adequate opportunities very soon on like HBO. That's going to be...
Oh, for sure.
That's going to be all over the schedule. People like the Nonstop. You got to schedule the Nonstop.
So what? How do you feel like the year has gone so far, movie-wise?
It's odd, and I don't know if this is a generality or if it's just my preference, but... big stuff has left me unfazed, and I actually think it's been a really good year for smaller films or films that I had no idea would be good. For instance, let's consider the top grossing film of the year so far.
That would be Captain America, The Winter Soldier?
It is not.
The Lego Movie?
That's right.
Okay.
I just looked it up, and... I was expecting nothing. I don't even know why I went. I think it was because of the trailer.
Yeah.
That's a funny, funny movie that has a lot on its mind. Besides, maybe they figured, you know, people are pretty much going to buy Legos.
You guys very generously, at F This Movie Fest, you brought me a gift. It was a Lego DeLorean.
Yes. Back to the Future.
Yes. My son, who is 5. Last week kept asking to build it, and I just was like, oh, it's going to be such a pain in the ass. So finally I said yes. So we spent, I don't know, almost 3 hours putting it together. There are hundreds of pieces in it. Within 3 to 4 hours, he had disassembled most of it and rearranged it in different pieces. And the crazy part of my brain was like, no, please, just leave it as the DeLorean. Let's put it on the shelf. It'll look neat. We spent so much time on it.
Will Ferrell.
But I had Will Ferrell in the back of my head, and I have to keep reminding myself, like, no, let him play. These are toys for children. Let him rearrange the DeLorean however he sees fit.
The 5-year-old has internalized the message of the Lego Movie. And that's always been my belief, because I'm at the point now where I'm thinking about selling off some stuff and could probably fetch more if I had left it in the box.
Right.
But we've talked about this before. Toys are meant to be played with, and of course, toys are for children.
But the Lego, I mean, there's a great example of Hollywood working. That's a big budget studio movie with a huge marketing push behind it. It didn't have to be anywhere near as good as it is.
And if it weren't for Muppets Most Wanted, I think Lego made me laugh more than any other movie so far this year.
I think Lego made me laugh more than Muppets Most Wanted.
I don't think I stopped laughing for days when Liam Neeson's bad cop just starts singing that song for no reason because no one's really looking at him. So Lego was a nice surprise. I wasn't the biggest fan of the first Muppets reboot, although I like it.
Yeah.
But I thought Muppets Most Wanted was a hoot. We've talked about that.
That movie bombed, by the way. Did you know that?
Oh, boy.
It made, like, less than half of what the first reboot made.
And, you know, maybe it's just the luck of the draw or something, but there's so much bad children's stuff that is successful. But then on the other hand, I think Frozen has become Disney's most successful animated film.
Yeah.
And if anything deserves that, I mean, I'm a big fan of Frozen besides the wrong-headed advertising campaign. But isn't it interesting when the film triumphs over the advertising campaign? Because little by little, everybody went to see it for what it was.
Right.
Not for what they were trying to sell.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure Mr. Peabody and Sherman outgrossed Muppets Most Wanted.
Which my wife still wants to see because she was such a fan of the original cartoon.
Just watch the original cartoon. I haven't seen it, but I have such an idea of what it is, and I don't think it will be very good. But I haven't seen it.
Lately, and maybe this is because I want you to get off my lawn, things give me this, I'm not so sure about that feeling. And in fact, it was your podcast on The Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Yes.
Which told me I can safely skip this.
You didn't see it?
I think I'm out.
We could talk about it for a while.
I think I'm out.
Did you at least read Film Crit Hulk's amazing screed about it? 237 problems or something. He asks 237 different questions about, and why did they do this? And what about this?
I'm such a fan of Film Crit Hulk. Now I have to see the movie so I'll understand. It was Patrick who first introduced me to Film Crit Hulk, and it's just fucking amazing, everything he does.
If you haven't read it, listeners, and you listen to our Amazing Spider-Man podcast, and you were inclined more to see things the way that I saw them, you should read it, because he backs up so many of the problems that I had with the movie in a far more eloquent way than I was able to, in all caps.
There was one thing about The Amazing Spider-Man 2 that I did want to bring up, because I knew it would come up, because it's part of the year so far, and that was a part of your conversation with Heath revolved around this, and some of the comments on the podcast revolved around this too. And it made me excessively ruminate on this issue to the point where I wanted to bring it to you and lay it out on the table. If a movie is based on something, no matter what that something is the purpose of a movie to capture the essence of the source material or to be a superior film on its own merits?
I would argue the second.
As would I, because I don't feel I have a dog in this fight, because I was never a big comic book fan. My favorite comic book was Fantastic Four, so good luck with translating that to film. In fact, I'm beginning to think that that's the unreachable one, that for a number of reasons, it can't be done. And the biggest reason is Ben Grimm. There is no way makeup, foam, appliances, or even CGI, there is no way to convey that in a movie. You know what I compare it to?
What?
The topiary animals in The Shining.
Interesting.
Kubrick was wise enough to know that there's no way. There's no way.
Yeah.
The minute they move in a movie, there will be people who will laugh.
I think Ben Grimm might be easier to do, just when I see what they're doing with motion capture. I think they might. They haven't cracked it yet, obviously.
And I turned to the Hulk,
right?
Because they were able to do the Hulk. But at that point, I would even say the Hulk is different than Ben Grimm. And now I sound just like a comic book nerd. And
he is different, though.
I'm not a comic book nerd, but I think this speaks to a larger issue than just a comic book. I think it's a fool's errand to say, I want this to be just like that. Because by definition, it can't be that. It's not ink on paper.
And again, not to get into the whole sort of fanboy argument again, because somehow I've been painted as the enemy of the fanboy, like where I want to challenge them all. That's not it at all. But I feel like a lot of times with comic book movies, part of the reason that there's such a disconnect and part of the reason why the dialogue is so oppositional is because I do think there's a big audience that just wants it to look like the thing that they read. I approach those movies and I want them to work as movies. And so whether or not it's exactly like the comic book that I used to read doesn't matter. I mean, it can be great. Hey, if they captured the spirit of this thing that I love, there's a greater chance that I'm going to love it. But I'm not going to give Amazing Spider-Man 2 a pass because at times it resembles the Spider-Man that I used to read. And that was the big complaint about Man of Steel last year was, well, that's not the Superman from the comics. And that may be true, but that's not what was wrong with that movie. That movie had a whole host of story problems that had nothing to do with whether or not it was faithful to the source material, right?
And I agree that it had multiple story problems, but I would say, and I'm even farther removed from this argument than you are, that it had a lot more problems than just story problems. But there is someone, no names, on the Twitterverse of late who is tirelessly championing The Amazing Spider-Man 2, and oddly enough, since you mentioned it, Man of Steel.
Yeah.
I'm glad that the film gave people pleasure.
Sure.
I'm not gonna piss on that parade.
Right.
But, and I think we've talked about this before, they can be great, they can be fun, they can be disappointing. I've had enough with the comic books.
Yeah. My biggest issue with Amazing Spider-Man 2, not to get hung up on this because we obviously talked about it a lot last week, has less to do with the Amazing Spider-Man 2 and more to do with the fact that I feel it's symptomatic of a bigger problem going on with blockbusters. That I feel like this is the direction that Hollywood, like big Hollywood movies, especially kind of genre properties, are moving, and that worries me, because if we're not going to call them out for making no sense and just trying to give us those moments of, well, this I like, and hey, they did Khan again and I like Khan, we're just going to keep getting it and it's only going to get worse. And to me, this movie was kind of the breaking point. I feel like we need to pull back from what is going on, but I'm not alone, but I'm perhaps outnumbered.
And I think the bellwether for this is it reminds me of the year that Hollywood made more from home video than it did in the theaters. And that did not bode well for cinema for a number of reasons.
Yeah.
And I think with these comic book movies, what we're seeing is they're grossing a lot more they're grossing a lot more money overseas.
That's exactly right.
Than they are here. And
right.
I'm not suggesting that the palette in other countries is less sophisticated. All I'm saying is there are certain proven elements that work, and one of them is you can't really have people talking for a real long time.
Right. Yeah, movies are changing as a result of the fact that we are no longer the primary audience for these movies, and that's a weird thing to get used to. I don't know.
And the famous line in Ghostbusters is print is dead, which, of course, later comes true. But I'm afraid, looking at some of my students, that talk is dead.
But you saw Captain America, the Winter Soldier, yes?
Yes. And except for the fact that all of those movies are a half an hour too long. But, you know, that's what multiple screens give us. You remember this because I think we both shared the same feelings. We were such fans of the first Captain America, and we thought it got so many things right. And I thought the Winter Soldier was wonderful and very entertaining, and I felt like I got my money's worth, and it was good. You know, make more like that.
Right.
But enough is enough. Speaking of movies where there isn't a lot of talking, some of my favorite movies so far this year have been movies with quite a lot of talking.
Okay.
You already did a podcast, a very wonderful podcast, on Grand Budapest Hotel.
Yes.
Which I don't know what forces made that be released when it was. I think maybe. Did it make any money?
Yeah, it made a bunch.
Oh, it was Wes Anderson's most
successful film.
It's
grossed, I think, at least $50 million in the United States, which is huge for him.
I think they were wise to not only target an audience that might want to see that mm-hmm. film, older moviegoers. I think the film was sold on the cast. I also thought the trailer and the TV commercial was really well done.
I avoided most of the trailer, so I actually don't remember.
And help me out here, because I am a much bigger Wes Anderson fan than you are, evidently. That clearly he loses a lot of people with Darjeeling.
Yeah.
And then, in my opinion, he comes back with Fantastic Mr. Fox
yeah.
and Moonrise Kingdom and Grand Budapest, which I think is three home runs in a row,
yeah.
especially Moonrise. Are you back on the train?
I'm not.
There was a time when you had had enough.
Oh, yeah. It was right before Grand Budapest Hotel. I just felt like I don't need to see this movie.
Even Moonrise Kingdom.
I liked Moonrise Kingdom.
But it was more of the same for you.
I guess. Yeah.
I love the same.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah. And I have those filmmakers. He's just not one for me. But I thought Grand Budapest Hotel was really good. I really liked it.
And if you're interested, listeners, this was a while ago, but Slate published this really interesting article about the way Wes Anderson designs his frame with examples from Moonrise.
Oh, it's like crazy symmetrical, right?
Yeah.
I saw that. I never actually looked at the article because I'm a terrible person, but I saw that it existed.
This is becoming the reference of the early 21st century. So there's an article on Slate. Yeah, I saw that. I didn't click on
it. I didn't read it.
It wasn't worth my click. I only have 3 clicks left and the weekend's coming.
I do it all the time.
But we see the headline.
There's 5 news stories a day where Erica's like, "Did you see that?" I'll say, "Yeah." She said, "Did you read it?" No, I didn't read it.
No. Life is short and reading is long.
I'm a terrible person.
So Muppets Most Wanted was a highlight, and Lego Movie was really, really funny, and Grand Budapest Hotel was a bit of sunshine, and then Captain America, and then thanks to you, Patrick Bromley.
Woohoo.
My wife was on some sort of business trip. Oh joy, the on-demand, the cable pay-per-view is all mine. And that's how I saw Cheap Thrills.
Yes.
And Cheap Thrills is an impressive bit of work because, let's face it, folks, this is not my first rodeo. And so the job, very early on, that Cheap Thrills has to do is it has to keep amping up the intensity and consequences. And it has to be surprising and keep flipping it.
Right.
And I thought it did that till the very end. I was really impressed by the story construction of Cheap Thrills and the performances.
4 great performances.
Which everyone I've talked to, because like a virus, I've been suggesting that people see it, and some people have actually taken my advice.
It's not for everyone.
No. But I think it says something about my friends. That film is right up my friend's alley. And even though we might disagree about aspects of the film, everyone agrees that the 4 performances, that the stuff that like David Koechner does in Anchorman gives you no idea that he's capable of doing this.
And yet it also like kind of makes sense because now you sort of rethink about some of his past performances and you're like, yeah, maybe there was a weird darkness going on in some of those. I don't know.
Yeah, especially the Anchorman performance. And then again, because of your recommendation and also friends of the podcast, Paul and Emma, who go to many, many things. They are a very, very busy, art loving couple. They won tickets to the Chicago premiere of Blue Ruin, and I got to accompany them, and Fandor, which is a streaming service,
okay,
but it's sort of curated.
I thought he was a dragon.
Their logo is a penguin. I wasn't able to ascertain why, and that night they gave away some subscriptions, but I didn't win one, hint, hint, Fandor, but it's a streaming service, but the films are curated, and I guess if you subscribe, you know that you're helping to fund.
Okay.
So Blue Ruin will be on Fandor eventually, but Fandor was sponsoring the premiere, and there was a nice little reception beforehand, which was nice, and they showed the film at the Music Box, once again the happiest place on earth, and then the director was there, and just an amazing Q&A.
Yeah.
I think both of us have sat through bad Q&As.
Mostly bad Q&As.
Having gone to Ebertfest for 12 years, I've suffered through a lot of people who make me sad that I live in Illinois. And, of course, Adam recently visited Ebertfest, and he came up with the ultimate example of the bad question. But even Dave, the guy who runs the music box, said at the end of the Q&A that he thought it was one of the best Q&As he had ever heard at the music box. People were asking really intelligent questions, and the director was very amiable. He said a lot of things about the script being tailored for what they had,
right,
what they could afford,
right,
and the fact that he knew that this buddy of his was going to be the lead actor.
Yeah.
That was my only regret. I so wish that that actor could have been there.
Yeah.
Because you'll agree, that's a performance.
It's great.
Right. That makes you wish small independent films had a shot at the Oscars. If you haven't seen Blue Ruin yet, you need to see it. It's really an impressive piece of work. Now, Blue Ruin made you want to see their first film.
Correct.
And have you
Murder
yet?
Party.
Have you seen it yet?
I did see Murder Party.
And are you going to write about it?
Not necessarily.
And what did you think?
It's a hoot. It's okay. A lot of fun.
Okay. Because lately, this week, you've been reviewing films from directors you like that have disappointed you.
Yeah.
And the other day when you teased The Cheerleaders, I thought you were talking about Murder Party.
No.
I was afraid that was... How did you see Murder Party?
It's on DVD.
Okay.
You can borrow it if you want. It's fun. And the actor from Blue Ruin, whose name I can't remember, is in Murder Party as well. And he's very funny.
And this is to our shame, because clearly both of us should remember his name.
Yeah. Sorry,
because
everyone.
The Blue Ruin performance is something.
Most of the good stuff I've seen this year, and I don't want this to be the case because I love going to the theater and seeing movies and supporting movies. Most of the things that I've really liked this year have been things that I've seen on demand.
It's the future.
And I think it's more so because of what the kinds of movies that go to on demand, because they all get a limited run, usually at the music box, usually about a month or two after they show up on demand, which is a terrible business model.
I was looking at the summer schedule, not for the music box, but just for release patterns.
Yeah.
And a bunch of stuff we've already reviewed and stuff that you're going to see next week.
Yeah.
Chicago Critic screenings. That all comes out this summer.
Yeah. It's a weird business model. And, you know, it's mostly smaller movies, a lot of horror movies, a lot of genre movies. But that's Cheap Thrills. That's Blue Ruin. That's Stage Fright. That was something else. The Unknown Known, which I thought was really interesting. Almost Human, which isn't great, but good enough. Kind of a fun sci-fi horror movie.
Yeah, Unknown Known got its requisite week at the music.
Yeah, room. Everything gets a very limited run at the music box, but mostly it's available video on demand. And that's most of my favorite stuff that I've seen, with maybe one or two exceptions, has all been through VOD.
I'm wondering if that's going to become most people's patterns, and I've actually noticed a trend toward that in some of the comments on the website, that if it's a big movie that's big and loud, you'll shell out the money,
right,
and reserve the evening. But if it's a smaller independent film or a documentary, you might decide that there's actually advantages to watching those at home.
I still think almost anything is going to be better in a theater. When I watched The Sacrament, I watched it through video on demand, and I wonder if I would have liked it more in a theater. I don't know.
I know one of my biggest regrets of last year was I happened to see Inside Llewyn Davis not in a movie theater, and kept reminding myself that I wanted to see it again on a big screen,
yeah,
because the cinematography is something special, but life is short.
Yeah, well, and the end of the year gets crazy with trying to play catch up with everything that comes out.
It's crazy.
I feel like a lot of the movies, even the ones we've already mentioned, some of the stuff that came out earlier this year, and maybe this is just the way things are going now. Stuff came out, I saw it, it seemed like a big deal at the time, and I haven't thought of it since. And I feel like no one has thought of it since.
Give me some examples of this.
The one that comes to mind is Noah. Noah made over $100 million. Noah was the movie everyone was talking about for a short time because it was controversial and it was this big deal. And I saw it and I thought it was interesting, especially for kind of a blockbuster movie. I really haven't thought of it since. And no one is talking about it. I mean, even Grand Budapest to some extent. I feel like it comes out, it makes a little noise for a weekend, and then things just vanish from the conversation.
And that's really the lunacy of the way films are released these days, when you look back not too far ago, that something would hang around for a longer time,
right,
and be part of the zeitgeist. I remember seeing the trailers for Noah, swearing to God as I envision him that I would never step foot in that. And then, of course, your review made me want to see it, but then there is a God. It was gone.
Yeah.
Speaking of a film leaving behind a residue that you can't shake, and I think Blue Ruin does that. I think Cheap Trills did that. The other night, I watched something else on demand, and I was recommending it to you.
Yes.
And maybe other people listening to the podcast have seen it, and they can weigh in on the comments. I'm on the fence. I don't like being on the fence. I'm a sizable man. It hurts to be on the fence. My wife and I watched Love Ship, Hate Ship, or maybe
I think
it's
Hate Ship,
Love Ship.
Love Ship. Either way, a terrible title.
Which was your first reaction to it, but I think it's really good.
Okay.
The scene in Bridesmaids that we both like a lot.
Yes.
It's like 90 minutes of that.
90 minutes of them pooing in a sink?
No. That's not the cupcake scene.
I know.
You can really tell it's based on a short story. It does have some story construction problems because there are things in short stories that don't work for real. Haley Steinfeld's in it. Nick Nolte's in it. Guy Pearce is very interesting in it. But clearly the centerpiece is this Kristen Wiig performance. And I know I was turned on to the film because Dana Stevens had tweeted about it and said, if you're interested in seeing Kristen Wiig in a dramatic performance, this is something you really need to see. And I'm not going to spoil it, but there's a scene about a third of the way through that involves a mirror that is one of the most fearless acting scenes I've seen this year.
Well, now I have to see it.
But be aware, I think other people might not have the same reaction that I did.
Okay.
I know that you have this predilection to stay away from films that make you feel uncomfortable.
Yes.
And there's some things going on in the first third that I was like, this, I relish that. I mean, that's why I go to movies. But it's, I felt it was so well done that it was making me really uncomfortable, and okay, I wanted that to be over.
Oh, boy.
I almost felt, I mean, but isn't that a mark that they're doing what they're trying to do successfully?
Yeah, for the most part.
Because it's not like they're showing an ant and I'm afraid of ants and that's the reason why. I mean, the filmmakers clearly mean this to be, in this case, one of the meanest things you can do to someone.
All right. Yikes.
I'll
check it out.
I am dying to know what other people think of it.
All right.
Because so far, I was impressed, and my lovely wife was impressed.
What was the movie? Kristen Wiig just did a drama, and it played for a very short time. What the hell was that called? The Girl Most Likely or something like that? It was about her and her mom.
Oh.
I want to say it was Girl Most Likely. I didn't see it.
And who was the mom?
Somebody famous.
Yeah, I caught a couple.
Nick Nolte. No, that's not right.
Nolte's actually really good.
Yeah.
In Hate Ship, Love Ship, playing a part that's difficult.
Is he grizzled?
Less grizzled than in other...
Oh, all right.
I know Jake had turned us on to... it was on HBO for a while, and then they abruptly canceled it. And it was
That show. Yeah, because the horses kept dying, right? So they canceled it.
Luck was really interesting.
I never saw it.
And Nick Nolte was good in it and grizzled. Mm. He is almost not grizzled
okay. In
Hate Ship, Love Ship. Other things so far this year that you particularly liked?
There's one that I love. Cheap Thrills might still be my favorite, but if there's a runner-up, it's definitely The Raid 2, which is an amazing movie, and it was kind of cool to... I had reviewed it a couple weeks ago, and then over the next few days, people would drop into the comments like, okay, I just went and saw it, and holy shit, it's great. So that was fun to be able to convince people to go out and see it, because I just think it's so great. And I was a fan of the first movie. To me, this is a better movie.
It's a very different film.
Yeah.
I went expecting the same thing.
Yeah.
And you have to hand it to him, because this actually has a story and characters and other things. It's interesting. I've spoken before on the podcast about the list. This year, there is a problem with the list and perhaps a problem with my brain. I have been neglecting to add films to the list, and then I forgot that I saw them.
Right.
But I saw Raid 2. It's a really impressive piece of work. I would say it's one of my favorite films of the year so far.
Yeah.
One quibble, because one of these days the quibbler will be returning to the podcast. As I sat through Raid 2, I was getting impatient with the pace and the length. Until the final third started, and I sort of saw, oh, this is going to pay off.
Right.
I thought it owed a lot to The Godfather.
Sure.
And it's kind of hidden by the fact that everyone's Asian, but in terms of its story construction,
yeah,
with the one guy who's playing the two sides against each other, that's Sollozzo, and from there you can draw all sorts of conclusions.
Right.
But hey, if you're going to use a classic film as an inspiration, why not use that one?
Yeah, it definitely synthesized kind of a number of different crime epics, which I'm just a fan of, and maybe that's why I cut the movie slack for its length, because I never felt like it was too long. Maybe it's the kind of movie that won't stand up as much on repeat viewings, but the first time sitting through it, I just was hypnotized by it.
Usually I don't have a problem with length, and my comment is usually, well, there's more to like. You're getting more for your money. The kitchen fight.
Yeah.
One of the
How do you pick a favorite, though?
A favorite in the film?
Yeah.
I think the kitchen fight is one of the 10 best fight scenes ever put in a film.
Oh, wow. All right.
Especially because you can argue that the entire film is leading up to the two best fighters.
Well, that's every, that's every action movie. But I really had a hard time trying to... I even heard criticism about the fight in the prison yard where everybody's covered in mud, that it's impossible to tell what's going on and what's the point. I thought the prison yard fight was amazing.
Well, would these people also quibble? Well, during the climactic scene in The Seven Samurai, I really don't understand why it has to be raining. Right. Excuse me, Kurosawa.
I don't know. And, whatever. People are allowed to not like whatever they don't like. But
if you still haven't seen it, you need to see it, if only for Bat Boy and Knifey Girl?
Hammer.
Hammer Girl, that's right.
She had two hammers. It's basically impossible to find now, so you have to wait until it comes out on DVD and Blu-ray. It made no money. I think it made like $1 million.
Oh, my God.
Which is... 1/100th of what like Mr. Peabody and Sherman made.
Oh,
so there you go. Good job.
As I said to Adam and Patrick the other day, when I noted that Bloodsucking Freaks is going to be released on Blu-ray, because God knows the standard definition of a DVD.
Can you imagine somebody doing the HD scan of that?
Now we will engage in shameless nostalgia. In my film study class, I assigned students to write a paper on a horror film, and I used to let them do any film they wanted because I've seen a lot of horror films. And as long as I've seen it, it was okay. And if I didn't see it, this is back when I had a lot of time on my hands, I would see it before the papers came due. Bloodsucking Freaks was the film that stopped that policy.
Really?
I said, I'm not going to do this anymore. And I used the list at the end of Stephen King's book, Dance Macabre. You had to choose from that list. Imagine I'm ushering you to better films.
Should we talk about bad stuff?
Yes, and I have a...
Unless you have more good stuff that
no,
you want to...
Okay. I have a short list of bad stuff.
Okay.
So we've already talked about The Raid 2 and Cheap Thrills and Blue Ruin and Hate Ship, Love Ship and Captain America and Grand Budapest and Lego and Muppets. And then for lowlights, because those were the highlights, my lowlights, pretty much everything else.
What? What have you seen that was terrible?
Oh, my God. Grudge Match was horrible.
I think that's still technically 2013.
Okay. I did not bring the list with me. I wish I had, because I am trying to get better about writing films down. But I don't know. I've seen a lot.
Yeah. I have kind of the middle ground movies where it's like there were things I liked. Noah was interesting. Muppets Most Wanted was funny. The Sacrament was not terrible, but frustrating. Veronica Mars I enjoyed enough, but whatever. Draft Day is not a great movie, but it's the kind of, but it's like, they don't make that movie anymore. The $30 million movie that's kind of for grown-ups that doesn't have tons of special effects. And not a great movie, but not a wasted time at the movies. So those were kind of the middle movies. And then everything else I saw, RoboCop.
That was miserable. And correct me if I'm wrong, I saw that with you.
Yeah. Still not the worst movie I've seen this year.
Although it is interesting, not interesting enough to spend money on, this was your observation that every 10 minutes it becomes a different movie.
Yeah.
That's something.
Which, again, it speaks to the way that blockbusters are being structured now, because Amazing Spider-Man 2 has some of those same problems.
And this is for you. And this is for you.
Knights of Badassdom, which is well documented that movie was taken away, but the finished version is garbage. The Amazing Spider-Man 2, All Cheerleaders Die, which really bummed me out. Sabotage, the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie that was really ugly and terrible. Transcendence, Johnny Depp is a boring computer. And The Other Woman, the Leslie Mann, Cameron Diaz.
I can't believe you went to see that.
Listen, it was starting, and
I was at the theater.
I can't even say it's the worst thing I've seen this year, but it's not very good.
And my other choice was sleep.
Yeah, no, I had to see something. It was either going to be that or Brick Mansions, and Adam Risky had talked me out of that.
I had a question for you, because you were the first person to introduce me to the concept that all of these parody movies that come out, the epic movie and Meet the Spartans and all of those, a date movie and all that nonsense, that they were all done by the same team and the marketing strategy is always the same.
Yeah.
Somebody in the commercial gets hurt.
Yeah.
And once you know that, it's sort of sickening how.
Yeah. It's usually like a celebrity impersonator. Look, there's Kim Kardashian, and then they drop a piano on her.
Boom.
Right.
So lately I've been seeing commercials for A Million Ways to Die in the West.
Yes.
And it seems to be from the same template, only the act of violence will happen, and then someone will shout that an act of violence will happen. I don't think I'm spoiling anything.
No.
It's in the TV commercial. The thing with the big block of ice.
Yeah.
And then it falls on someone.
Yeah.
Much more graphically in the theatrical trailer than in the... And then...
Seth MacFarlane.
Goofy yells, "That went south so fast," or something similar. Are they afraid people are going to watch it and not know that?
That's always been my issue, and I don't know if it's something that he engages in, because I tend to not watch his TV shows, but my issue with like the Anchorman movies, sort of that Will Ferrell approach, where the thing happens and then everyone comments on the thing afterwards. It's like, no, it's not funny. When you spend another 30 seconds talking about what just happened, just show the thing and then let us laugh. This seems to be taking that same approach.
And until I applied your date movie template to Million Ways to Die in the West, I was actually kind of looking forward to it.
At least it's sort of the conceit of the movie.
And a couple members of the cast.
Yeah.
The fact that I like Westerns and the fact that I like to go to the movies.
I'm definitely going to see it. I have low expectations. I laughed enough during Ted that I would willingly see this next thing. And yeah, there are funny people in the cast. There's a couple jokes. I like something about please don't kill us on sex night.
Yeah.
I think that's a funny line. There's a couple funny jokes in the trailer. I just don't laugh as much at like I'm gonna shoot a full load at your cans or people dying, you know, in fun. And I think it's hilarious when people fall down and get hurt in the right movie. Like, I'm not above it
in the right way.
Right.
I'm also interested in seeing Liam Neeson, who continues his unrivaled streak of I'm gonna work, buddy, and get through this
and do crazy things. He's doing all kinds of different movies, which is cool, you know.
I'm gonna do a voice in a cartoon, and then I'm gonna save a bunch of people on a plane, and then I'm gonna be a bad guy in a bang bang shoot 'em up western.
I'm interested in Liam Neeson, comic actor. What else coming out this year are you looking forward to?
So now I have Box Office Mojo in front of me, which I'm assuming is a good source for this.
Sure.
And I was looking through what's coming out this summer, because, you know, summer. not only do we get a lot more movies, or it seems like a lot more movies, but we have a lot more time to watch a lot more movies, especially if we're off for the entire summer. So I started looking at this, and we were talking about this briefly before we turned the machine on, that there seems to be an absence of big movies, tentpole, or maybe...
I think it's this option.
Because they don't appeal to me.
Right.
There's I Own This Friday.
Right.
That scares everyone else away, and so we're going to get the one big film that gets 1 week... which is the worst strategy you could... What's next? You get 1 day.
There is a movie, you know, there's a big movie every Friday, but if you're not excited about Transformers or Maleficent or the new Adam Sandler movie or whatever, then it's like, well, I take a week off, I guess, because there's basically one a week.
And by new Adam Sandler movie, of course, Patrick is referring to this summer's I Take a Vacation.
Yes.
Good Lord. So last weekend saw The Amazing Spider-Man, and that was enough to scare everything off of that.
That was the kickoff of summer.
The counter programming to that is a film called Belle, which I've been seeing the trailers for what seems like 6 months. But to show you what we're dealing with here, I believe I read that The Amazing Spider-Man 2 opened on more screens than almost any other film in history.
And will still be the lowest grossing Spider-Man movie.
Well, here's what I don't understand. Because on Monday, Box Office Mojo was falling all over itself to explain why this damn thing only made $92 million. Do we need... that seems like a healthy gross to me.
Yeah.
Amazing Spider-Man opens on 4,500 screens.
Good Lord.
4,500 screens. Belle opens on 4.
Wow. And I don't even want to see Belle, but like, this is why we can't have nice things.
And next weekend, which we're about to begin tomorrow, we get this new children's film, because you have to have a children's film every weekend, the poster for which...
Is this The Wizard of Oz?
Yes.
This doesn't count. This is not a movie.
The poster for that has been in my dreams. For some reason, they've added some sort of jester. I don't remember a jester in the books, and it's Martin Short.
The fact that it's getting a theatrical release is crazy to me. It seems like something that was made in a foreign country that then they redubbed some American voices.
Dubbed into English. It's opening on 2,600 screens.
That's insane.
And then we have Mom's Night Out.
Christian comedy.
Which, yeah. And then Neighbors,
right,
which I was lukewarm about, but Adam's review today said it was fun.
Seth Rogen, I'm in.
Here's another example of what's wrong with life.
It's so damn long.
Neighbors tomorrow is going to open on 3,200 screens. Chef,
yes,
a film I think looks really interesting,
yeah,
gets 6.
Yeah, I mean, it will roll out wider. That's the plan, but I don't get it.
Speaking of screens, the director of Blue Ruin took the film to Cannes,
okay,
where he was hoping to sell it, and they had some takers, and he told the great story that when they were sitting down to the negotiations, he said to his team, look, I want this to be seen in theaters. I really want to give people the theatrical experience. I am going to hold out for 5 screens. We are not going to make a deal until they give us 5 screens. 5 screens, no less. And the company that had the winning bid said, we'd like to open this on 100 screens.
Nice.
And he just melted.
That's amazing.
And then on Friday, the 16th of May.
This Friday, if you're listening to this, the week this comes out.
Right, because what you did is you took some NyQuil last weekend.
That's right.
And you slept through the weekend, and you missed nothing. You really didn't. And now you're all rested up. In time for Godzilla. Now, I cannot tell you how high my expectations are for this.
I'm hearing something interesting, and I'm trying to avoid much more marketing, because I've seen maybe the first 2 trailers, and I thought they were really great.
Yeah, me too.
I love the tone of them. I love the way they hint at the monster, but they don't show it, even though we basically know what the monster looks like. I think they've been so smart in the way that they've marketed this movie. So now I'm trying to avoid other stuff because I've already had a couple things kind of spoiled for me just in headlines. I don't even read the articles, but the headline on some movie sites will spoil something. I'm hearing that the tone of the trailers has been kind of somber and very disaster movie, almost 9/11-ish.
Yeah.
It's Bryan Cranston sort of weeping and the government is lying and everything is sad and destroyed. I'm hearing, and I could be wrong, that the movie is a lot kind of pulpier than that. That it's more of a big monster movie than this disaster thing that they're marketing. I'm fine with either one.
Yeah, I can handle pulp, but just you bringing that up makes me realize that the original Godzilla, that you see it, when the new one comes out, they're showing the Japanese original that week at the Music Box, if you're interested in seeing that. And the original Japanese film, it's very clear that Godzilla is a metaphor for the atomic bomb.
We were just talking about this last week, me and Heath.
Yeah,
it's a really sad movie.
There's no question.
Yeah.
And it would be interesting if the makers of the new one saw an opportunity to kind of do the same thing with these obvious 9-1-1 things that are still floating around in the air, witness Man of Steel.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I agree that this certainly presents itself as an opportunity to do that. At the same time, I have now seen 9/11 sort of processed and digested in so many blockbuster movies. I mean, last summer alone was just 9/11 at the movies, that I would be okay if they went a different way.
And this might be crazy, and at this point, Patrick reaches because he knows he's going to cut this out, but Toy John used to show King Kong versus Godzilla a lot. And then a couple weeks ago, Sven Gulli showed it, and then Rusty showed it at the Sci-Fi Spectacular, and man, it plays for a group looking for hipster chuckles. But what all of those screenings reminded me of is my initial reaction to Godzilla when I was a child, which was the thought that there's something going on far away, but that you can see on the horizon, and it's really bad, and there's no way to stop it.
Yeah.
I used to dream about that. I used to dream that way up, just as far as you can see, Godzilla's coming, and it's not going to be good.
Yeah.
And that's the feeling that the new trailer engenders in me.
It's interesting that you say that, because the first shot of the first trailer they put out, it's a bunch of guys like paratrooping out of an airplane. And they can't quite see what's down there.
Mm-hmm.
And the closer they get, the more it starts to come into focus that it's this giant monster. And while that's never been an exact nightmare of mine, it spoke to this weird nightmare feeling of something that I've had before, where you know that this bad thing is down there, you're just waiting until you can see it. Yeah, it's an amazing shot. I mean, right then I was hooked.
That is gold to be mined.
Yeah.
Plus, I would argue that the new remake has its work cut.
Because now we have to say, the new remake.
Well, I think you know where this is going. I can still remember sitting through that Matthew Broderick thing.
Mm-hmm.
And when it was over, we stood up, and it was like we had been in the theater for 15 hours.
Yeah.
It's just so miserably bad.
Yeah. 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 And that was coming off Independence Day, which you and I are both on the record as being fans of. And so I went into it with some optimism. I thought, well, these guys could be the ones to do Godzilla in a fun way, but
they even changed Godzilla.
Yeah. No, it's everything about it is truly, truly terrible.
Don't change Godzilla. Friday, May 23rd, we get Blended.
Yeah.
Mm.
Which I will have to see.
You can go. This might make it more entertaining. Take a pad of paper.
Mm-hmm.
And a pencil.
Yes.
And write down all the product placements.
Okay.
That's something.
I know there's Hooters because that's just how the trailer opens.
And he's
a commercial for Hooters.
He's done Hooters before.
Yeah, sure.
Hooters and Sandler. They go together. And of course,
he's the biggest fucking asshole in the world. I get so angry when I think about him because he's capable of more.
It bothers me because he does have a very specific talent mostly seen on SNL, and it's hard for me to decide if it's cynical on his part.
Yes,
or
it is.
Then he's the most cynical.
That's why I'm
bitch.
Saying he's a fucking asshole, because yeah. he's capable of doing something more.
But perhaps lots of people like us will be ignoring Adam Sandler because that's the day X-Men Days of Future Past comes out.
Yeah.
I'm still excited.
I'm going to see it. I'm optimistic. I don't know.
I realize it has a tremendous potential.
Yeah.
To be, let's put everything in a blender yeah. and hit frappe.
Yeah. I saw a TV spot for it the other day that killed most of my optimism. It was very jokey. Everything was very one-linery, and none of it was funny. If you're going to do a trailer that's all jokes, some of them should be funny. It made me nervous, but I'm still looking forward to it enough. And then I think the weekend after that, it's Million Ways to Die in the West and Maleficent, which I don't know.
And at that point, we're very excited because A, school's almost over, and B, that's the weekend of Wonderfest.
Ah.
And so we'll be skipping both of those films to enjoy.
Not me.
The food and people of Louisville. Excuse me, Louisville. On June 6th, we get every Tom Cruise film made in the last 10 years.
Yeah. I'm intrigued.
You were very high on 21 Jump Street.
I liked it a lot.
On June 13th, 22 Jump Street, which you've seen the trailer, right?
Yeah.
Looks like diminishing returns.
Yeah. I'm going to see it. I like the people involved. I'm a big fan of the first movie. I still can't think of a good or successful comedy sequel. Can
Ooh,
you?
Hold on. Let's put our heads together.
I think we played this game when Anchorman 2 came out, because I just don't really think there is one, and maybe this will be the first.
No, that would be fascinating if it was true that it was impossible.
I can't think of one. I'm sure one exists. I'm sure some Weekend at Bernie's 2. Yes, of course, obviously. but I can't, off the top of my head right now, I can't think of many.
Here's something for you. There's a film convention going on. Wait, let me rephrase that. I'll change the verb. There's a film convention coming up.
Yes.
I forget where it is. It doesn't matter. Neither one of us is going. But the highlight of the con?
Yeah.
You ready?
I'm ready.
Weekend at Bernie's reunion.
Wow.
All four.
Terry Kaiser.
Yeah.
Silverman, McCarthy, Catherine Mary Stewart.
That's right.
I'd be there for Catherine Mary Stewart.
You going to book your tickets?
I might.
I think it might be Atlanta.
I saw that movie as an 11 or 12 year old at like a free 4th of July screening, but like it was a free sneak preview before it came out. To 11 or 12 year old me, that movie played.
What year are you talking about?
It would have been like 89.
Oh, well then wow, my memory of that is completely screwed up. When I was in college, you know, back in the early 50s, cable TV was a new thing,
yeah.
and like HBO didn't have a lot of movies, so it'd be the same movie again and again and again. I remember Weekend at Bernie's. Maybe that could have been one of those original Comedy Channel movies.
Oh, maybe.
It just played on a continuous loop.
Yeah.
I was weekended out.
They couldn't get Don Calfa?
He's too busy doing
Return of the Living Dead reunions.
You were high on How to Train Your Dragon.
Yes.
The sequel comes out on June 13th.
Not at all excited.
And then, if you like the musical that a friend of ours appeared in Chicago, the perfect man to direct the film, because he's directed dozens of musicals, hasn't he? I count one that he's directed.
Bird?
Oh, I guess that's two.
What's the other one?
Honky Tonk Man?
Oh, I never saw Honky Tonk Man. I'm fascinated by his career because he does seem to keep trying to do different kinds of movies. I think he doesn't do most of them successfully.
And I don't mean to be unkind, but he is getting much older.
Oh, yeah.
So to what extent did he direct the film?
I don't know.
Jersey Boys comes out June 20th, and a film that I've never heard of, maybe you've heard of it, Think Like a Man 2.
It's the sequel to Think Like a Man.
What's Think Like a Man?
Think Like a Man is based on a very popular Steve Harvey book.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and this would be the sequel.
And, this
and it's T-O-O, correct?
I was going to say, that's how they make it clever. And then, on June 27th, everyone get off that Friday. What does this make? The 16th? Transformers? What does this make?
I went to see the last one. I know you did too eventually when it came to the patio. I went to see the last one because it was shot in Chicago.
Oh my God.
I can't think of a reason why I would go out to this one.
I successfully stayed away from the first two, yeah. And I wanted to see what, because yeah. I still remember the summer that the first one came out, and we may have talked about this on the podcast before, people sharing with you their impressions of the film and your reaction was probably better than the film itself. But if anyone, here's another opportunity to comment on this podcast. Please tell me what the appeal is, because I don't get it.
I played with them when I was 7.
Oh, if
you know what I mean?
Is that it?
I think so.
Oh, I'm not going to argue with that.
No, you should. They get one. They get one based on that. I went to see the first one because I played with these toys when I was 7. They have made 3 shitty movies now. Why are you going to the 4th shitty movie?
Okay, yeah, because this one's the 4th. It's not the 16th.
Correct.
July 2nd. We're heading into the 4th of July weekend, so all these movies come out on Wednesday. And this Tammy thing.
Yeah.
It's not a remake of Tammy from the 50s, is it?
I don't think so.
And the joke is she's not a thin, attractive teen?
I don't think it's a remake, no.
Okay. Do you know what Tammy is about?
Melissa McCarthy is heavy and falls down? I have no idea. The trailer just came out. I didn't watch it.
I'm going to be cautiously optimistic because, again, I was so cynical and jaded about The Heat.
Yeah.
And I thought The Heat was fine.
It was.
I thought it was so much better than I thought it was going to be.
Sure. I think Tammy will be much more identity thief than The Heat, but I could be wrong.
So here we have the chroma test strip of Melissa McCarthy's career. July 11th, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Why Cookie Rocket 2?
I am legitimately excited about Dawn of the... And I didn't even love Rise of the Planet of the Apes. But I think I talked about this in an article somewhere. Like, now we're at the point where...
Where it's Conquest?
Yeah. Where just the prequel shit is done. The apes have taken over.
Yeah.
That's why I go to see a Planet of the Apes movie. I don't go to see them in laboratories, like, getting smarter and talking to James Franco. I go to see them riding horses and carrying guns, which they're going to be doing.
That's a good point.
I'm really excited about that one.
July 18th. What on earth is Jupiter Ascending?
That's the new Wachowskis movie.
Ooh.
It's going to make $0, but I'm really excited about it.
But it will make you happy because you like Cloud Atlas.
It's original science fiction. It looks big, and no one will go see it.
And then Patrick might have to schedule some me time because there's a certain 5-year-old who's going to drag you.
Oh, no.
To Planes, Fire, and Rescue.
Absolutely. And was that last year that Planes came out?
I think so.
That was one of the worst movies I saw last year. So my hopes are not high for Planes, Fire, and Rescue.
But... And that's interesting because I've caught it in 5-minute Oof. Increments in your house.
Right.
And it seems harmless.
You are mistaken.
Okay.
It is truly a terrible, terrible movie. He's actually been watching Spider-Man and Spider-Man 2 lately, the Raimi ones.
Oh.
Which I was nervous about because there's like a scene in each that I kind of sometimes try to skip, usually involving the villain's origin or somebody dying or something.
Yeah, you're wise.
Let
him have a childhood.
Yeah, but I've had them on, and it just reminds me, having just seen Amazing Spider-Man 2, how good they are and how much better they are at doing the thing that Amazing Spider-Man 2 tried to do.
And then this will divide us.
Okay.
Because I thought the original was dumb fun and delivered, and I got my popcorn. July 18th, The Purge, Anarchy.
I still have not seen The Purge.
But you've seen the trailer for the sequel.
I'm really excited about the sequel.
Why?
I think it looks interesting. I think it looks cool.
They've enlarged the scope.
Well, it actually takes place during The Purge now, whereas the last one was like, outside, it's chaos. Let's stay in this house.
I'm glad you're saying that about the trailer, because again, I know it's not a great film. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It was what I went to see. It was a great popcorn movie, I thought. But when I saw the trailer for the sequel, yeah. I'm like, well, this looks interesting. At least it's not another house.
Exactly. I think the trailer gives away too much. I think it has too many beats that we shouldn't see. But
there's been two different trailers.
Okay, I've only seen one.
The first one was really good. It showed that couple in the car.
Oh, well, I did see that one.
And then you weren't even really sure.
Right. And then it's slowly revealed like, oh, this is the new Purge movie.
And that was great.
Yeah.
The second one, which is the one you're referring to, yeah. gives away way too much.
Way too much. But I'm also excited to see it because Frank Grillo is the star, and I really like him. And he's a guy who's like out to get revenge. And as I recently divulged, I think maybe in my Blue Ruin review, I love the revenge movie. Love it. Unless there's a rape involved, in which case I don't. But if it's somebody out to take revenge, man, take my money.
That's why you're such a fan of Death Wish 3.
There are so many reasons why I'm such a fan. R.I.P.
I'm thinking, though, given the very low budget origin of the first Purge movie, that it would have been such a disappointment if the sequel were called The Purge Next Door.
I'm excited to see it, and I will have to see the first Purge, I guess, before I go see the sequel, but I think it looks cool.
And finally, let's end this on July 25th. We have time to
talk about
August.
You don't want to go into August?
Well, you know what I noticed? The only other film I'm excited about comes out in August.
Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I got a bad feeling that, just like we've said, summer keeps inching up.
Yeah.
It keeps ending earlier.
Okay.
And I'm starting to think that in a certain way, certain studios are now using August as the dumpster.
Oh, they always have?
Not always.
Okay. I feel like they always have.
For films, they have no faith.
But see, I don't think that's the case with Guardians of the Galaxy, because Marvel has stuck mostly to off months. Like Thor came out in November, Captain America in April. This is coming out in August. They kind of stayed out of May, June, July this year.
Comic book fans seem to be excited about Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
And I know nothing about Guardians of the Galaxy.
I really don't either.
But when I saw the first trailer, my first impression was, this looks like the goofiest shit I've ever seen.
Yeah, and it's James Gunn.
Which is reason alone.
That's the reason to be excited about it. What does James Gunn do with $100 million?
So what is the difference between the July Hercules and the early in the year Hercules?
I don't know. This one, I guess, is like the more polished one. This one is the Armageddon, and that one was the Deep Impact. That one was the Ants, and this is the Bug's Life.
Does one of them have Kevin Sorbo in it?
No, he was on the TV show.
Then I'm just horrible. I'm just hopelessly.
This
confused.
One stars The Rock, which is reason to go see it because he's a fun movie star, and is directed by Brett Ratner.
Okay. The Rock, a reason to see the
yeah,
film.
Right.
Brett Ratner, a reason not to.
Rennie Harlan did the last one. And I was totally going to go see it the weekend it came out and write something about it. And that was the weekend that I had my weird back thing. I wrote down a few that come out later in the year that I'm excited about. We won't go too far ahead.
No, good.
Just a couple. The Interview, which is the new Seth Rogen, Evan Goldberg movie that they've written and directed, where they have to like go... James Franco, I think, plays a journalist who's trying to go interview Kim Jong-il or something. Interstellar, the new Christopher Nolan movie.
Mm.
Inherent Vice, which I may be more excited about than any other movie. It's Paul Thomas Anderson's new movie where he seems to be going back to trying to entertain, which is nothing against The Master or There Will Be Blood.
Jake was telling me about this.
Entertainment did not seem first on his mind with those movies.
No.
They were big, important art movies, and this is more like a detective movie with Joaquin Phoenix, and it just sounds so terrific. And Cameron Crowe has a new movie out later this year, which I'm sure will not be good.
And I do want to mention, because it's already played some festivals, the new Richard Linklater film is apparently, he sort of made good on Kubrick's promise to... It took him 12 years, and we actually see people growing up, and that's something that film movies can do.
It'll be an interesting experiment, if nothing else. And Linklater is kind of a guy like Steven Soderbergh, where whatever he makes is worth seeing because he'll do something commercial and then he'll do something weird. And then, you know, he kind of is one of those guys that bounces back and forth.
Definitely. And a couple Ebert Fests ago, this is when Ebert was still with us, he showed Orson Welles and Me.
Which I still have not seen.
And it's worth your time. Yeah. And Linklater was there. And honestly, one of the best Ebert Fest Q&As. In fact, Linkletter was bemoaning the fact that the soundtrack album that was released for Orson Welles and Me didn't have all the songs. So he personally burned what he wanted the soundtrack to be, and he gave them to people as prizes.
That's cool.
While we're at it, given that Patrick's earlier point was that we're watching a lot more stuff at home on demand and on little shiny discs, I went to the Digital Bits, which is a wonderful website you should check out, and I've got some things that perhaps we're looking forward to and perhaps we're not. So what I did was I went through their release schedule and I came up with stuff we might be excited about and then the craziest sounding shit you've ever heard.
All right.
I swear to you, I did not make one of these up.
Okay.
These are real.
Okay.
May 13th.
Okay.
Bikini Swamp Girl Massacre.
Sure.
And
I can picture the swamp.
It seems to me that anyone who would buy that,
mm-hmm.
it's a pretty specific fetish.
Why is anyone going to a swamp in a bikini?
Now listen, for it to appeal to me, the girl has to be wearing a bikini in a swamp. And that makes me angry because of my past. And you know there's going to be a massacre. Also, that Tuesday, I think all these are Tuesday. New video comes out on Tuesday. Lizard Man.
Sure.
May 20th, Olive Films, doing their important work, is releasing a film I've never heard of. Whispering Smith.
No.
It's a Western with Alan Ladd. I've never heard of it. And then, perhaps you've seen, in the early days of video, these were popular, when videotape was still a novelty, that someone would put a fireplace on the tape.
Right.
And the idea was if you didn't have a fireplace,
right.
you could pretend that your TV was a fireplace.
Right.
And then from there, we went to the aquarium.
Right.
Okay, this is very exciting. On Tuesday, May 20th, the first aquarium Blu-ray comes out.
Oh, my gosh.
That's a 4K scan.
Wow.
I know my previous aquarium DVDs have not been high enough definition to suit me. I am hoping that this 4K aquarium is much better. And then I think my favorite title of the night, and it really shows how the mighty have fallen. My God, this man did the animation for Dragon's Lair, the video game.
Okay.
Banjo the Woodpile Cat.
Wow. I'm not familiar with Banjo the Woodpile Cat.
And unless I'm mistaken, Bluth did Cats Don't... That's Bluth,
that
isn't
sounds
it?
Right, yeah.
Banjo the Woodpile Cat.
That's a new Don Bluth movie?
I'm guessing it didn't have a theatrical release, but by gum, it's coming out on May 20th. On May 27th, I would like everyone to take off their hats right now and get very serious. Sleepaway Camp is being released by Shout Factory, a Scream Factory, without our commentary.
Yeah, it's a shame. I currently have the Blu-ray to review.
So I am...
It's on my...
You already got it?
Yeah.
So I would like all of our listeners to boycott this release.
It really should have had our commentary on it.
If only as a goof. That's yeah. like the best one we've ever done.
Yeah, yeah, that's a funny one.
No one calls us. And Cheap Thrills is released on DVD on May 27th, in case you didn't find it on demand. On June 3rd, something called The Outsiders, the complete novel, is being released, which I believe is a director's cut.
Yeah, that's what Coppola calls his director's cut. I don't know why, but...
Of The Outsiders. And
right.
I know of late, one of the lesser known cable channels has been showing Rumblefish.
Mm.
I am such a big fan of Rumblefish.
I haven't seen it in a long time. Maybe I need to revisit it because I don't remember loving it.
I love that film.
I must need to see it again.
And then, in a few weeks or months, or maybe it was years ago, Patrick was watching some Jerry Lewis films.
Yeah.
The Nutty Professor comes out in a special edition that will rival every overpriced special edition for how much crap they've stuffed in the box to raise the price. And here's some measure of how popular Jerry Lewis is currently in America. If you buy Nutty Professor, you get three other Jerry Lewis movies in the box.
What are the three?
Blu-ray, lesser titles.
Some of the lesser ones are the ones I like. Is any of them The Day the Clown Cried? Because I would buy it if
no.
it was The Day the Clown Cried.
And I have this dream that we will one day see it. I think we will.
Harry Shearer has seen it, right?
Yes.
That's what I thought.
He wrote a magazine article about it.
Yeah. Jerry's got to die soon, right? Will we see it when he dies, maybe? Not that I'm praying for the death of Jerry Lewis, but please die already.
I'm actually a fan of Jerry Lewis, but on the recent Blu-ray of King of Comedy,
yeah,
they have a Q&A that was done for the Tribeca Film Festival with Scorsese, De Niro, and Jerry
Lewis. Yeah.
And you should watch it, because I'll let you borrow it. Okay. I bought it. Jerry starts doing this shtick, and Scorsese is real accepting, and, hey, folks, it's Jerry. And De Niro is just mortified. It's like they're sitting on the stage at the Tribeca Film Festival, and De Niro's like, this is bringing back memories of what it was like to work on the film, because apparently Jerry would ad-lib all the time.
Mm.
And one of the more famous lines from the film, it turns out in this discussion, Lewis ad-libbed, when the Rupert Pupkin character goes to his summer house,
yeah,
and with the date, and the date is just mortified, and Pupkin starts saying, so I made a mistake, and Lewis says, so did Hitler. That was ad-libbed.
Wow.
That wasn't in the script. So check out Nutty Professor. Bloodsucking Freaks comes out on Blu-ray, and that's a biblical sign of Armageddon. And Son of God.
The one that was out like a couple of weeks ago?
Yes.
Okay.
I think Son of God is Son of God is worth picking up, if only for the trailer that my wife and I have been making fun of for months.
I don't think I ever saw a trailer.
It's sexy, sexy Jesus.
Ooh.
And a very self-aware hip Jesus. He like stretches his hand out to one of the apostles and says, come on, let's make history.
For real? That happens in the trailer?
I may be exaggerating a little bit, but not by much. But our favorite moment in the trailer, our favorite moment in the trailer is at the very end, the screen goes dark. And we hear Jesus' voice saying,
somebody get me down from here.
You're going to hell.
Oh, for sure.
The trailer goes dark, and we hear hip, sexy Jesus say, I'm coming. And every time we saw the trailer, Jan and I would add, to a theater near you.
Yikes.
We love it. And now I've lost my place, and here we go. June 10th. Recently, I started watching True Detective.
Yes.
Have you seen it?
Oh, sure.
It's real good.
Of course.
It comes out on video June 10th. Nonstop.
Ah, finally.
Nonstop fun.
Coming to a red box near me.
June 10th. And if you are busy on Sunday night and weren't able to check out the new version of Cosmos with Neil deGrasse Tyson, well worth your time. Imagine a show on Fox that says science is real.
Produced by Seth MacFarlane.
You're kidding.
Nope.
Ooh, yeah. He just went up in my estimation.
Yeah.
On June 17th, Criterion releases Picnic at Hanging Rock, which was the film that made Peter Weir famous, and also Hearts and Minds, which is an amazing documentary about Vietnam, our Vietnam adventure.
Which is what it should have been called.
Also, Night of the Cobra Woman.
Sure.
Starring Joy Bang.
Okay.
Who is one of those Andy Warhol starlets. And a film I've never heard of. I think it's fiction. It's called The Final Member.
Oh, yeah.
It's about a penis museum.
Yeah, that's Drafthouse Films is putting that out.
I think our listeners would be very interested in a film about the penis museum.
I had a screener link to that, and I did not watch it.
And then on June 24th, finally, the Criterion Hard Day's Night is released.
Yeah.
So reserve that whole week to watch it again and again and again. And
our podcast, not a bonus feature on there.
Okay, so boycott that. Actually,
but aren't they also doing like a 4K release like the week that it comes out?
Yeah,
that's what I thought.
And I'm guessing, again, that will be at the Music Box. The exciting thing about the Criterion release, besides the fact that it will finally be correctly framed with the right soundtrack or maybe even some soundtrack options, is they're including that David Leaf documentary, You Can't Do That.
Which you talked about, I think, on the podcast that we did.
Really amazing.
Yeah, I'm excited about that.
And then a film that I'm only reasonably familiar with, On June 24th, Nude for Satan comes out remastered.
I've been nude for my wife, but never nude for Satan.
You should try it. It's a summer thing. But again, I'm wondering, is there someone clutching their DVD of Nude for Satan?
Yeah.
I have been writing the video company literally for years.
I mean, I really think it's the people that are into crazy kind of cult movies and niche movies that are the ones who...
It never looks good enough.
But who are the ones who will buy a movie three times, who will upgrade it, you know?
It never looked good enough.
Revenge of the Nerds just came out. I feel like most of the people that have that on DVD probably aren't going to upgrade to Blu-ray. But the people that love Nude for Satan will buy the Blu-ray.
Lately, when I look at what's being released, it really seems like the home video arms of major studios realize that the day of this has passed.
Yeah.
And so this is the last.
They're just dumping out the rest that they have.
This is the last gasp.
Yeah.
A new feature on F This Movie, Grandma and Grandpa Alert. On July 1st, an animated film that I am not familiar with is released on video, DVD and Blu-ray. It is called Legend of Cerivia.
Okay. I'm not familiar with it.
Completely unknown.
Yeah.
But I've seen the packaging. Here's the marketing strategy. Grandma and Grandpa, listen. It kind of looks like Mulan and kind of looks like Frozen.
Okay.
So the entire marketing strategy is Grandma and Grandpa are going to buy this.
There's a ton of those.
To give the grandkids?
Yeah.
Thinking that they have the one that... And can you imagine the thousands of children who open these on Christmas morning?
Yeah.
Legend of Cerivia.
Oh, I remember like Karate Panda was one. And right now there's like Ice Princess or something. It looks like Frozen, but it's not.
What a way to make your living.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's that, the Asylum, that company, and they do it for like... They have Transmorphers, and they specialize in just blockbuster knockoffs. There was one for Pacific Rim. I don't remember what it was called, but it was very close.
Hello, I make my living tricking children.
Yeah, that's exactly.
No, I make my living. It's worse. I make my living tricking senior citizens and disappointing small children.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a special level of hell being reserved for those people. On July 8th, the George Pal Time Machine is finally released on Blu-ray.
That's cool.
I'm such a fan of that film. I love that film.
I haven't seen it since I was very young. The one that's always in my head is like, it must have come out in the 70s. Priscilla Barnes was in it.
Oh, yeah.
Was that made for TV or did that come out in theaters?
I think it was made for TV.
That's the one that I saw the most growing up.
And Point Blank with Lee Marvin.
Oh, that movie's so good.
Finally comes out on Blu-ray. And unless I'm confusing it with something else, that was originally going to be made for TV. And they said, this is too much for TV. And so it got a theatrical release.
That movie's incredible.
The Walter Hill film Southern Comfort.
Which I'm excited about. I've never seen it, but I really want to.
It's one of the good ones.
Yeah, right.
Comes out on Blu-ray. And continuing a trend that there is no reason on earth for, but that I applaud. Two different companies are putting out public domain Bela Lugosi films on Blu-ray. July 8th, The Death Kiss.
Ooh.
Check it out, man. On July 15th, David Cronenberg's Scanners is released by the Criterion Company. That'll keep us busy.
Even though Scanners is far from my favorite David Cronenberg.
I believe I've told this story before. If you can't wrap your head around what the shower murder in Psycho meant when that film was released in terms of people's expectations for the way stories work. I saw Scanners my freshman or sophomore year in college. I saw it the weekend it was released, and I cannot tell you. People left.
Really?
No.
I mean, it's so commonplace now. Like, but, you see that on TV. I just saw it on...
Oh, my God.
Inside Amy Schumer.
Oh, yeah.
Had exploding heads.
Yeah, well, the more things change. On July 22nd, something I caught on cable is released on DVD and Blu-ray. It's a documentary called The Sunset Strip.
Okay.
It's really good.
I haven't seen it.
Not what you'd expect at all. And another documentary that I have no experience with, but I'm looking forward to seeing. It's called Lunch.
Okay.
A group of Hollywood actors and writers have been meeting for lunch once a week for about 40 years.
Oh.
It's this group. That's and neat. It's a documentary about them.
That's cool.
Carl Reiner, Hal Cantner, Sid Caesar, God rest his soul.
Yeah.
Two or three others. I think that would be very much worth our time.
Yeah.
July 29th, The Big Chill is released on Criterion. I have very warm memories of that film from when I was growing up. Although I will admit that the film it rips off is a better film.
Is that the John Sayles movie?
Return of the Secaucus 7 is really good. That one company is releasing the 30th volume of Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Wow. That's Shout, or Rhino and Shout. Yeah. It's Shout Factory.
That's a lot. And I didn't get in early enough to get an autographed one.
Sorry.
But they're putting out that Herzog box.
Oh, yeah. Holy shit, that's Shout Factory, too.
He's going to autograph the first 100, and like I heard about it crazy early and went to...
And still didn't get it.
No.
No kidding.
But even without an autograph, it's worth it. And even if you do like, here's what it costs versus how many movies, it's a real incredible...
I haven't seen most of them.
And then finally, it's the dog days.
Yeah.
And we're starting to think about going back to school. Mm. And a certain 5-year-old we know will be starting kindergarten, which is a crazy epic.
I know.
And what is it? Flickr Alley is releasing all of the Chaplin Mutuals on Blu-ray. Mm-hmm. And the word on the street is they're new scans. And the exact same day, the Mack Sennett Comedies Volume 1.
Wow.
And clearly you don't need as much resolution when the films are in black and white and from 1912. But the first volume has 50 shorts.
Wow.
So that's my August. Guardian of the Galaxy and Mack Sennett Pie in the Face shorts.
You know what you skipped?
Won't you join me?
Scream Factory has like 8 movies coming out this summer. Yeah.
I think I didn't skip them, but either it wasn't obvious that it was them or I have no interest.
Okay.
Is one of them Evil Speak?
Evil Speak is one of them, yes. Evil Speak and Sleepaway Camp and Final Exam all come out this month. And I'll grant you, sure, yeah. You don't have to get excited about those. Although Sleepaway Camp, come on.
You don't really have to boycott Sleepaway Camp, but clearly it is our dream.
Sure.
To one day be asked.
But that movie just holds a very special place in our hearts. Just A, because we were all at that screening together. That crazy screening where I first thought, oh, we should do a commentary for this. And then that was our first commentary. And I would agree that's maybe still our best. But now I love that movie. Leviathan. Okay, maybe not super exciting. Ginger Snaps. Dog Soldiers just got pushed. Ravenous is one. And of course, the biggest of all, Phantom of the Paradise, which comes out this summer on Scream Factory Blu-ray.
I should not have forgotten that. And oddly enough, I bought a region-free Blu-ray player.
Yeah.
Specifically to buy that French one.
Yeah.
And then never did.
Oh, well, good. Because that would suck if you bought the French one and now Scream Factory is putting it out.
Are the contents virtually the same?
I believe so, but I think there's going to be some new stuff on the Scream Factory one.
And there's a making of.
I believe so. I mean, there always is. It's like a retrospective. They always do the retrospectives. But I also think there's a new interview with Brian De Palma, who doesn't do a ton of interviews.
And I've heard Paul Williams is available to talk about the film.
I believe so. If you pre-order it now, and pre-orders just became available, it comes with a really cool poster. So I will be pre-ordering my copy.
For just a second, I thought you were going to say, if you pre-order it now, Paul Williams will come to your house
and sing the song of your choice. So lots to look forward to still this year, question mark, sort of. You have to, you know, pick and choose, but I think if you know where to look, there's stuff to look forward to.
I'm looking forward to 2 movies.
Okay.
And 2 Blu-rays.
Okay.
And at the end of my life, that's enough.
Thank you guys for listening. Next week, we're going to be talking about Godzilla, so make sure you tune in, and then JB will only have one movie to look forward to, and it's Bloodsucking Freaks.
Gojira!